Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hello, and welcome to Ask a Clean Person, the podcast on Acast. I'm Jolie Kerr, a cleaning expert, advice columnist, and author of the New York Times bestselling book, My Boyfriend Barfed in My Handbag, and Other Things You Can't Ask Martha. You should send your questions about cleaning or anything else, really, to joliekerr@gmail.com. You guys, I have something special and pretty different for the show to round out Let's All Make Our Beds 2019. Today, I'm joined by Unfuck Your Habitat's Rachel Hoffman, and we're going to be doing a two-part episode in which we explore the intersection of mental health, cleaning, and our beds. Hi, Rachel.
Hello.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Welcome to New York.
Thank you.
You guys, Rachel came in all the way from Rhode Island. We had a little bit of an exciting travel morning because I went to meet her at Penn Station and her train got horribly delayed.
Yes. And power. It was very exciting.
It was. And it turns out that we share a similar phobia, which is, Rachel?
Bridges over water, yeah. Which guess where my train got stuck? Yeah. On a bridge for an hour. It was great.
But you made it and you're here and I'm so, so grateful. As I said, you guys, these two episodes will be pretty different for the show. In that the tone will be much heavier and much more serious than what you're used to. Because of that and because of some of the topics that we're planning to discuss, it's appropriate for me to give a trigger warning. I actually have never given a trigger warning on this show.
No kidding.
I had one episode where I shared a very sad update about a listener question. And of course, I like prepared the audience that like something sad was going to be said, but I didn't give a trigger warning. So this is actually a first for the show. But I think it's really appropriate in this case to give you guys a trigger warning for depression, anxiety, suicide, and hoarding. And also to suggest that if you do want to listen to this, but you know that it might be difficult for you, that you wait to play this episode until you're in a private space or somewhere where you feel comfortable. If it does get a little emotional for you. And I'll say also, I mean, you guys are used to hearing me cry on this show. I'll cry when things are good and I'll cry when things are bad and I'll cry when I'm chip chatting and blah, 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 blah. But this is an episode that I've wanted to do for a long time, but haven't felt like I could do. And I want to thank Rachel for really pushing me in the right way to do it. This is actually something we've been talking about for
months at this point.
Like 6 months?
Six months probably.
Like
yeah.
That.
It's been a big chunk of time.
It has been a chunk of time. And it's a topic we both really care about. It's a topic that we both live in our own lives and with the work that we do with our readers and our listeners. But at the time that we started talking about it, my own mental health situation was just not I was just not in a place where I could do this kind of episode. And I was really honest with Rachel about it. And I said, I really want to do this and I really want to do it with you. But right now, I just simply for my own self cannot do it. And she really hung in there with me. And I just want to say how much I appreciate that, Rachel, because I also think it's good to gently push people.
Right. But I think what you did in response to was, you know, probably one of the big lessons that, you know, we try to impart to people, which is recognize what you can or can't do at any given time and sort of adjust your expectations accordingly. Yeah. So, you know, if somebody says, you know, I'm having a tough time, I'm not emotionally feeling up to doing this, like that's an important thing to know from yourself. So I'm actually kind of grateful that you did that because I feel like, you know, we're both in a good place to be having this discussion now. And I think that's, you know, if we had tried to handle it earlier when one or the other or possibly both of us was having a tough time, you know, we probably wouldn't come to the same sort of an idea as to what we wanted to do with the show. It would be a little bit different. So I think we're both in a good place for it now. So I'm kind of glad that we waited a little bit.
I think so, too. And I also am glad because I think that and this was actually one of the things I had originally suggested to Rachel in terms of timing, that I think LaMob, Let's All Make Our Beds, is a very natural time to talk about the intersection of mental health and cleaning, because so often for so many of us who suffer from any mental health issues and physical health issues too, bed becomes a very significant and meaningful space.
Yes.
Both negative and positive. Mm-hmm. And so I think that there's a really natural fit for these two episodes to happen during LaMob, during the Let's All Make Our Bed Challenge. I hope you guys are having a good time with it. I will also tell you that these two episodes will be heavy, but I've got something like so crazy planned for April. So like, don't you worry. The crazy Jolie train is going to be like right back on that bridge, and it's not going to be stuck.
It's not going to be stuck.
So actually, just like quick note on that, I'm actually this year going to move Wash What Happens. Instead of doing Wash What Happens, my spring cleaning, deep cleaning arc in April, I'm going to move that to May. I'm going to move Here Comes Summer to June. And so that will be where you'll get your standard Ask a Clean Person the podcast arcs. But in April, I'm going to be doing this thing called April Fools. It's going to be a series of roundtables. It's going to be unstructured. It's going to be funny. It's going to be like off the chain. We're going to do some sex stain stuff. We're going to do some cat mess stuff. I think yes, I'm going to get a roundtable of sports writers to come in and troll John Taylor about red clay. Like, it's going to be real Joel-ish. So after we get awesome. Through these heavy eps, there's going to be like a big fun thing to look forward to at the end of it. One other thing about this episode, we're going to start off with a really tactile question, and then we'll get a little bit heavy. In the second episode that we do, we're going to also start a little light, and then we're going to get pretty, pretty heavy in that second episode. So just so you know what to expect from this. Before we get into it, though, I want to remind you guys that I offer bonus episodes and all sorts of other cool rewards to my premium subscribers. If you would like to help underwrite my show and listen to Chip Chat and Tinder Talk by becoming an Ask a Clean Person the podcast patron, go to patreon.com/askacleanperson to help support my show. Rachel and I are not going to be doing bonus episodes because kind of a mind fuck to go from.
We're going to be talking about some really serious mental health stuff, and then let's talk about the tots. It's great,
exactly. So we're going to not do bonus episodes with Rachel. I will have bonus episodes for you. I don't know quite what they're going to be, and they may be a little bit delayed. But I know also you guys all have some catching up to do on Totville. So catch up on your bonus episodes. Find out what my wildlife has been like. Oh, you guys, I got stood up on Friday. I actually got stood up twice last week.
What?
I know.
What?
You win some, you lose some. But it was fine. But there's a little Todd update. Okay, let us get into this episode. The first question we have, as I said, is very tactile. It's one that I've gotten a lot lately. I know Rachel has a lot of thoughts about it, too. I'm actually going to have Rachel read this question from Marion. It is about weighted blankets.
All right.
Hot topic.
Marion writes, "Hi, Jolie. My husband mentioned maybe getting a weighted blanket. He is a Marine veteran, and I guess some of his Army veteran friends are getting better sleep with the weighted blanket. I'm game, but obviously before we get one, I'm concerned about how to wash it. I feel like 10 pounds or more of blanket would fully murder our washing machine, and it seems like washing it into the bathtub would be an actual nightmare. The idea we came up with to keep it clean was to find a blanket compatible with a duvet cover and then just wash the cover, but my husband asked if I could ask you. What would Jolie do? What would Jolie do with regards to keeping a weighted blanket clean? And did he tell me to email you in order to score some pre-Valentine's Day points with me? Thanks for everything. You are the best."
So I got this email right before Valentine's Day. I did actually write back to Marion, and I was like, I'm going to save this one for I'm doing this episode of LaMob with Rachel. And like, this is perfect. This is anxiety blankie. But I was like, I'm also not going to make you wait. So
right.
I did. And also, I was so I normally don't write back to email. I don't have time to do it. But I was so tickled by the fact that her husband was like, "Can you ask Jolie?
What would Jolie do?"
So cute. Okay, so I have instructions.
Yay.
For you guys. So most weighted blankets, not all, but most, are indeed machine washable. And you are right to have that concern that, like, this is a very heavy, this is a 10-pound thing. Is it going to murder? I love how she said it's going to murder my washer.
Washing machine.
It is not going to murder your washing machine. And here's how I know it's not going to murder your washing machine. 10,000 years ago, when I was still allowed to do stuff like this, I went to Procter & Gamble's laundry school.
Ooh.
I went to Cincinnati, Ohio. Actually,
that sounds like fun.
Rachel, you should go.
I want to go. Sounds like fun.
Okay, I'm actually going to put you in touch because they just invited me again. I can't go because now that I write for the Times, I can't accept press trips and stuff like that.
I have no such problems.
But you have no such problems. And at the time that I went, I was writing for publications that allowed it, and I went for a story and disclosed it and all of the right things that you're supposed to do. It's fascinating, and I feel like you're going to love Procter & Gamble Laundry School, and I want
that
you to come back
so much fun.
For for when I do laundry school on this show. I do laundry school in September, back to school, right?
Sounds good.
I want you to come back, and I want us to talk about the things that we learned at Procter & Gamble Laundry School. But here's one of the things that stayed with me all these years. So laundry is expressed in small, medium, large, extra large loads, but like no one ever tells you what that actually means,
right.
But they tell you at Procter & Gamble Laundry School. A large load is 10 to 12 pounds. So I know that a 10-pound weighted blanket is going to be A-okay in your washing machine, because a washing machine can more than handle a large load. In fact, it can handle, for most part, most of them can handle an extra large load. So you'll be A-okay.
Okay.
So you can wash it. Now, with that said, sidebar, not all weighted blankets are machine washable. And I've got tips for those of you who end up with one. But I also want to say, if you're going to buy a weighted blanket, please do your research and buy one that is machine washable. Just, yeah, head
right.
this off at the pass.
If you don't have it, yes.
Right, yeah. If you already have one and you're like, shh, too late, that's okay. Jolie's still here for you. But try to get the machine washables if you're in the market for one. So you can machine wash it. It's going to be, you know, as I said, a large load. So you want to use the correct amount of detergent for a large load. You want to use your cold water, as always. And you want to use the heavy-duty cycle. The heavy-duty cycle is going to be the thing. This is not the time for the delicate cycle.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. And so you're going to be A-okay to do it. You can, you know, again, check your instructions and make sure this is okay. But for the most part, they should also be machine dryable, medium or high heat. This is the time when using your dryer balls is really going to help. Not because you need to fluff the blanket up, because obviously a weighted blanket
is not going to fluff.
Not well. It's not fluffy. But because dryer balls also serve to speed up drying time by increasing the airflow and sort of moving anything around in the machine more so that it can dry more quickly. And that is obviously something I think that you're going to want to do with a weighted blanket. It may take quite a long time to dry, but it will be dryable. Also, I have zero feelings about whether or not you use fabric softener on this one.
So really,
if you're like I'm
you're
desperate.
Okay with it.
If you're like I'm desperate to use fabric softener and you've taken it away from me, Jolie, and you want to go ahead and use it on your weighted blanket, sure.
Wow.
Again, I don't think you need it though. Is
no,
the thing, because they're not staticky. They're not fluffy.
They doesn't get staticky, and that's the thing. Is you know, like we were talking about before. I have a weighted blanket. One of my concerns is pet hair.
Yes.
I have two dogs. So with my blankets, fabric softener is usually a thing, if only because of the sheer amount of dog hair.
It helps to repel the...
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
I have a tip for that.
Yeah.
Rubber household glove.
Yes.
Yes. Household glove. So rubber is the natural enemy of hair. If you put on a dry rubber household glove and you just rub it over the surface of, you know, your weighted blankie, your couch, whatever, it'll like ball up all of the dog hair, cat hair, rabbit hair, whatever kind of pet hair you got going on, into like little clumpy tumbleweeds.
Yes.
And then you can just pull them off.
So. I actually have this really great little rubber brush that is super awesome because you can use it to clean off your furniture and you can flip it around and then use it to brush the dog.
Yes.
So, which is my favorite thing in the world. It's one brush for the dog and everything that the dog sheds on, which is basically everything.
Yeah. What kind of dog do you have?
I have two Chihuahuas.
I love Chihuahuas.
I do.
Love them.
They're little brats, but they're but they're adorable. Yep. And
it takes a little brat to know a little brat.
Exactly. Exactly. And one of them doesn't shed very much, and the other one makes up for it.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. There's blonde dog hair over everything in my house.
Yeah. Okay. So there's your pet hair tip. Now, if you do end up with a non-washable weighted blanket, or you just need to spot treat it because you don't like want to wash it and you got a little stain on it or something, you can absolutely spot treat it, you know, using sort of my old like white washcloth with the appropriate stain removal treatment. You know, use your enzymes for protein stains, for, you know, your blood, your sexual fluid, your tears. I mean, it's a weighted blanket. That's fair.
It's fair.
Use your Shout for food, especially chocolate. Again, weighted blanket. You might be sitting under that thing.
Crying and eating chocolate ice cream. Yeah.
Eating your feelings.
Sounds about right.
Yeah, Shout's the thing for food.
Sounds about right.
Yeah. So spot treating is the way to go. If you need to do a bigger cleaning, bigger surface cleaning on a non-washable weighted blanket, it's like a tongue twister.
Yeah.
It's actually like a brain twister was what that was. your portable carpet and upholstery cleaning machines, yes, you yes. guys. Oh, tragedy in Jolieville. They've raised the price on the $69 handheld no. cleaning machine, so it's no longer nice.
Oh,
but at least
nice.
I bought it when it was still nice. It's now $75. It's not going to break the bank. The one that I have is the Bissell. It's a cordless handheld. It looks like a dustbuster, but it's an extraction machine, so it forces cleaning solution in, sucks it back out. Perfect thing for a weighted blanket that cannot go into the washing machine. You can, of course, also use your larger size corded portable ones.
Which is what I have.
If that's
yes.
what you have, like your little green machine. Which one do you have?
I have a Bissell, also a Bissell upright. I don't.
You have an upright?
Yeah.
Whoa, the big guns.
I know, I got the big guns because yeah. I have a big house, not a big house, but I've got a lot of carpet.
Yeah, you have carpet and you have dogs.
And dogs.
Yeah.
So that's one of those, you know, the things that you just sort of invest in when mm-hmm. you have dogs. But for those of you who do have the bigger corded ones or the upright ones, they almost all come with upholstery attachments.
Absolutely.
So use your upholstery attachments. Attachments are the best.
That's what, oh my God. Yep. Speaking my language, I'm always banging on this show. I'm like, the attachments are
use your
friend.
Attachments,
use
folks.
Your attachments. Yep.
So yeah, absolutely. Yeah. The carpet steamer upholstery attachment is
it's very clutch.
Yes.
And it has a lot of different uses and purposes.
Yeah, and this is one of them.
Right. And then the last thing to say is, yes, a duvet cover is a very good idea on a weighted blanket.
Yes,
yes indeed.
And
you have a duvet cover.
I do. So I bought a weighted blanket maybe about a year ago. And I had it in my house for about 3 days with my dogs before I realized that I very much needed to get a cover for it. So
yeah.
The blanket that I got, actually, it is machine washable. But I also know myself and having to go through the whole heavy load and take forever. It's once in a while I want to do that, but not every time that I get some dog nonsense on there.
Right.
So.
You want to treat it basically like a duvet insert, like the kind of thing that you wash maybe 2 to 4 times a year.
Exactly. Rather than a weekly basis.
The thing that you're washing once or twice a month.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. So,
once or twice a week.
Yes. Yeah. So my weighted blanket that I got actually has a corresponding cover because they all are a slightly odd size usually. The company that makes it actually makes the matching. And it's great because it's got the little ties on the inside, which I love.
Perfect.
Which I actually do with
What's
all of my.
What's the company? Where did you get?
I got it on Amazon.
Okay.
Yeah, it's from Amazon.
Okay.
Which, like everything I own. But I, you know, I, with my regular duvets, I always tie the ribbons to keep them into the, you know, keep them from shifting around. So this one actually came, the blanket itself has loops and then the duvet cover has the ties, which
perfect.
Is perfect. So, you know, once a week I can just pop it off, throw it in the washing machine, and then the weighted blanket underneath is still in perfectly good shape.
Yep.
As long as I put it out of the dog's reach while I'm washing the cover, which.
Good point.
That's one that you learn the hard way.
Yeah, exactly. So like, you know, again, just some tips if you're thinking about buying a weighted blanket. You know, do choose one that's machine washable. Do really consider getting a duvet cover. Do look for one that has the loops for the duvet
yes.
cover to tie it in. Do just little things you can do to kind of make weighted blanket ownership as easy and lo-fi on you as possible kind of thing. Yeah. And do you so I'm going to tell you, I do not have a weighted blanket. Mm-hmm. I probably will never get one, even though I'm tremendously anxious. I'm very claustrophobic.
Oh, yes.
And yep. one of my things that, like, we talk about it all the time in Lamab, basically every episode I mention it, I'm a no top sheet person.
No top sheets, yes.
Because I need my feet to be able to rove in the night. And that partly has to do with my claustrophobia. And I think that a weighted blanket would actually make me feel claustrophobic.
Yeah. I, you know, for me, it's like, you know, I also have pretty bad anxiety. And it's more of like an immediate grounding technique, you know, where, you know, a lot of us who get panic attacks and things like that, we all have our sort of grounding exercises and things that we do to reset back to normal and to kind of pull yourself out of that mindset. And something about the weighted blanket is, you know, you get under it and it's immediately, you know where you are, you know, it's mm-hmm. it's you're a little bit more aware of your body. And it's for me, it's immediately relaxing. It's immediately sort of it kind of chills me out. And but yeah, I don't have claustrophobic. I don't have any claustrophobia
okay.
issues. So I can definitely see how that would be a thing. So for my particular type of anxiety, because, you know, and I'm used to having, I got the dog sitting on me and everything. So it's, you know, the weight is actually very comforting
mm-hmm.
for me.
Yep.
And I think a lot of people have found that, you know, but I use it. It's my couch blanket. I don't have it on my bed. I have it on my couch.
Okay.
Which for a variety of reasons. But I'm, you know, I have this whole sort of routine involving my weighted blanket, you know, make a cup of tea, sit down on the couch, get under the blanket.
Will you talk a little bit about it?
And you know, it's a very, because we were talking earlier about, you know, how for those of us with mental health issues, bed is a very sort of central place in it, and it has a lot of associations. So for me, I don't necessarily want to get into my bed every time I'm feeling anxious, because to me that brings it to another, a whole different level of where I'm at mental health wise. You know, if I'm crawling back into bed in the middle of the day for something other than, you know, a really well-earned nap. So, you know, I really love the feel of the weighted blanket, and I love how immediately grounding it is for me. So I think if you are somebody who has anxiety issues without the claustrophobia issues, you know, it's definitely worth looking into. You know, it's there's just something really comforting about it for me.
Great. That's really very, very interesting and helpful to hear. What are some of your other little rituals when you start to feel anxious? Because when we get into the second segment,
yes,
we're going to talk much more about this and the rituals. But we're on it right now.
Yes.
So I want to hear some of yours.
So I have, you know, if I'm having a panic attack or dissociating or any of those sort of more serious anxiety type things, you know, my go-to grounding exercise is, I go through, you know, if I'm sitting down, I say five things I can see, four things I can touch, three things I can hear, two things I can smell, one thing I can taste. Sometimes those are out of order because I can't always remember which comes first and, you know, in that, you know, when I'm in the moment. But it's just a matter of reconnecting you with your surroundings, and making you aware of where you are, and what's around you at any given point. So that's, you know, that's my big to sort of snap me out of it.
And does that
help
you also to snap out of whatever thought cycle, because it forces your brain?
Yes, because you can't
focus on something.
Yep, you can't really fixate on whatever it was that had gotten. Because for me, a lot of times it's, you know, you get an idea or a thought stuck in your head, and
no, I have no idea what that feels.
And you just can't manage to shake it. So this sort of redirects that thought process and forces me to focus on something else. So that's always been very effective for me. You know, and even just, there's a lot of times I'll get very spun up about, you know, things that make me nervous or anxious, or like, you know, even coming into the city today, you know, I'm like, okay, well, you know, I got to get to the train station on time, and I got to, you know, and so I'm going through my whole itinerary in my head, you know, and just saying, you know, at some point it's out of my control.
Yes.
You know, like when you get stuck without power on a bridge, for
right.
example. So for me, what I do is I just
feel your anxiety about that, by the way,
through the text.
We'll tell you guys sort of sidebar. When we were planning this, I could feel your anxiety about the travel in particular.
Yes, because I am very suburban, folks. I am not a city girl.
And I was like, oh, like, you know, I'll give you like, it's a straight shot to the studio from the train station. And then I could feel like that there was still anxiety. And I was like, you know what? Let me just come pick you up at the train station. Like, no.
Which is the kindest thing in the world that anyone can do to me when I'm coming into a city, is meet me at the station.
But it was so easy for me to do. It was just no skin off my nose whatsoever for me to do it. And yeah. I was like, this is going to make her feel
way more at ease,
so much more at ease. Yep. And it's nothing for me. So I'm going to do that.
Right. And it's just a matter of being out of your comfort zone and out of your environment. You know, I don't spend a ton of time in the city. You know, I love coming here, but there's always a little bit of that anxiety that's related to it. So, you know, basically what I do is I just write everything down, you know, like, this is my little itinerary. This is what I'm going to do. And then I just ignore it, you know, because it's there and I know that I've written it down and I know that I've, you know, dealt with all of the things that are rushing around inside my brain. But to be able to kind of put that aside and say, all right, that's as much attention as I want to pay to that one particular thing. You know, I don't want to spend any more time obsessing about, you know, any of this stuff. So I write it down, I get it out of my brain and onto paper or into my phone. And then I just kind of walk away from it. And it's, you know, it's helpful. It is helpful.
Good. All right. So listen, I think actually this is probably a good time for us to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk a lot more about sort of the tricks and techniques that you can use to help manage mental health issues that are specific to sort of cleaning and organizing. And I think we'll probably talk a little bit more about our own personal experiences with this and sort of why we do what we do. So Rachel and I will be right back with more about the intersection of beds and mental health issues. This is Ask a Clean Person, the podcast.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Welcome back to Ask a Clean Person, the podcast. I'm Jolie Kerr, and I'm joined by Unfuck Your Habitat's Rachel Hoffman. We've been talking about beds, cleaning, and mental health. Okay, so this is the part where we're going to get a little heavier. The weighted blanket was heavy in one sense. Sorry, I can't help myself. I have mental health issues. You have to be nice to me about my bad jokes.
Oh, is that how it works? That's good to know.
And I will say, and I think that you're the same way too, that humor is a huge coping mechanism for me. That, like, you know, even when things are really bad, like, I can usually laugh at myself.
Yeah, or agreed.
Something else. Or agreed. Or at least, like, pull back enough to be like, you know, you can get some perspective on this.
Yeah.
You know, like,
and humor is always going to pull you through a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, no matter how bad things are, if you can make a joke about it, it helps.
Yeah. A good laugh always helps.
It always helps.
Definitely. Okay. So we, this isn't always a question, but it was when I kicked off La Mob this year on Twitter, I got a tweet that I literally pinged me so much. I grabbed it and I was like, I'm going to use this as part of the Rachel episode, as sort of a jumping off point for the next part of what we want to talk about, which is really like the bed and mental health intersection. The handle at Moxie the Maven, which I love.
Me too.
That. Do you want to read it, actually?
Sure.
Yeah, read her little tweet.
So Moxie the Maven chimed in on Twitter with what we're going to use for the jumping off point. And she says, I mean, making my bed is a way of avoiding depression by starting the day taking care of myself and feeling like an adult. But also the cat sleeps on my pillow if I don't make the bed, resulting in nighttime mouthfuls of cat hair. Which, trust me, I get that. I'm right there with you. Dog hair on everything. And yes, making the bed is the most effective way to keep the dog hair out of your sheets.
Yes.
Which is, you know, as long as you don't let them sleep in the bed with you, which I'm...
Right.
I'm going to take the fifth on that one.
Yeah.
They're really small. They're small dogs.
They're small dogs. Listen, I'm a dog lover, so
yeah.
I'm never going to say anything to anybody about, you know, not having the dogs in bed with them. But yeah, during the day, it is actually really, like, even though, yes, of course, their fur is going to get in the bed when they're sleeping in there with you, it still helps to...
Yes, keep it down.
Keep it down if they're not in it 24 hours.
Exactly.
8 hours instead of 24 hours. And the pillow thing is very real, because usually your dogs are not up on your pillow.
Right. Cats love pillows,
on the other hand.
Cats love pillows, yes. And there's really nothing worse than... like the tweet says, like a mouthful of cat hair. It's just,
yeah.
So you want to avoid that however possible.
Yeah. So I wanted to say that, you know, I think that connection between starting the day with a tiny accomplishment.
Yes.
Is a thing to not underestimate when it comes to managing your mental health issues. I think there's also another thing, and this I don't think this is it for Moxie the Maven, but I know it's true for other people, that making the bed, and you sort of touched on this too, about like, if you're in the bed in the middle of the day, it means like things have really gone.
Yeah, something's gone off the rails there.
Sideways. That making the bed is a good way to keep yourself out of bed during the day if that's a pattern that you know you fall into.
Right.
And I know for my own self, I mean, I'd make the bed every day, you know, I mean, I'm conditioned.
Yeah.
I cannot leave an unmade bed.
Yeah. That's another thing that makes me anxious. If I'm like halfway to work and I realize that my bed's unmade, it's just like, no, normal people wouldn't turn around to do that.
Oh yeah.
But you would. So that makes me feel better.
I actually, So because I, you know, I work from home and I'm a morning person, my usual routine in the morning is I'm up, I make my coffee. I usually start writing like right after I've poured the first, like before I've even taken the first sip of coffee, wow. like after I've poured it, I'm writing. And so usually I do the first sort of 2 hours of writing from bed, but I do not work in bed. I work on bed.
Yep.
And it's not made yet, but when I get out of bed to make the coffee, I like straighten the covers and like fold it back and rearrange the pillows for work on bedtime.
Right.
Because being in bed is one thing, being
yes,
on bed
agreed.
Is another thing, and made bed is a third thing. Like I have delineations.
It's like a whole spectrum.
It is a spectrum. But I need it to be tidy for me to work in it, but I don't want to make it and then sit on it because I don't have to make it again. And
right.
It's the whole thing.
Yes.
But yeah, so I have that that thing. But when I do have especially bad days, I do a thing that I find very helpful. And I guess also we should say, I mean, I think it's pretty clear. We're not mental health professionals.
Correct.
We're cleaning experts.
Yes.
Who deal with our own mental health issues.
Yes.
And so when we're talking about the mental health aspect, we're talking about it from our own personal experience.
Correct.
And if anything that we say helps you, wonderful. But this is not medical advice.
Correct.
So one thing that I do when things do get very bad and I'm having... You know, we've all heard people say this term, that the kind of day where you just can't get out of bed.
Mm-hmm.
I have a rule for myself. I give myself permission to not get out of bed. But there's a caveat.
Okay.
I do have to get up. I have to make the bed and then I can get
right back in it. Yep.
But I have to, it has to get made. At some point, it has to get made. And I actually tack on another thing to that. Which is at some point you got to get up to go to the bath, because then everyone's like, if you can't get out of bed, I'm like, okay, but at some point you're going to get up to go pee. Bladders are bladders.
Yes.
Like,
it's going to motivate you out of that bed, right, for that one particular task.
At some point you are going to get up, and also you're probably going to get hungry and plod over to the fridge for a little snacky, or you're going to get thirsty and you're going to want a little drinky, or you're going to get up at some point. I
at
just
some
know you
point
are.
You're leaving that bed.
Yes, you are.
For
and,
something.
Yes, for something. And when you leave that bed, that is your time to, even if you don't fully make it, to straighten it. But also when you're in the bathroom peeing, turn the shower on and get in it. You don't
yes.
have to wash your hair.
Yep.
You don't have to shave your legs. You don't have to exfoliate your tush.
I have to say that a shower during a really low time is, you really can't underestimate how much of a difference that makes, because, you know, just, and I, trust me, I understand the thought of trying to actually get out of bed to get in the shower. It just seems completely overwhelming sometimes, like it's just way too big of a step. But, you know, if you're in the bathroom peeing already, just, you know, turn on the shower, hop in.
Yep.
It doesn't
and that's
have to
why
be a whole
I say
thing.
It like that, because it is so overwhelming. But I have found in my own life that a very good way to snap out of that, I can't even take a shower, is when I have to get up to pee, just turn in that shower on. Mm-hmm. And once it's on, you can also say to yourself, I don't even have to get in it. Right? You can
yep.
use that same bed trick that
yep.
I use on myself. You can make it and get right back in it. You give yourself permission. But once it's on, you probably are going to get in it.
Right.
And I love the way that you just said that. Like, don't underestimate the power of just getting just even a rinse.
Yes.
And, you know, that's why I say you don't have to wash your hair. You don't have to shave your legs. You don't have to exfoliate. You just.
Well, my advice when people are sort of in that can't get out of bed stage, too, is in addition to taking the you know, you can take your shower and just put on fresh pajamas. You don't have to get dressed and go out and do anything. Put on something that you haven't been wearing for 2 days or however long it's been, and give yourself permission to get back into that bed, but having made a little bit of progress for yourself.
Yes, absolutely. And I live this in my own life. I mean, that you nailed it exactly. That's exactly my process. Like, I give myself permission. All I have to do is get up, make the bed, take a quick shower and put on fresh peach, and then I can get right back in that bed. And actually, in my family, we have a term for it. My mother calls it nightgown days.
Yes.
Nightgown days.
I love that.
And she describes a nightgown day as being the kind of day where you just stay in your nightgown all day, but at some point, you get up and you shower and you put a fresh nightie on. And she says that that's the best part of the nightgown day is the putting on the fresh nightie.
That sounds
like
amazing.
To her, it is so indulgent. It's not the spending the whole day in the nightgown. It's the indulgence of the clean one.
The clean one, yes.
and being like, I'm just doing this.
But there's also a real sense of accomplishment, which, you know, as silly as it sounds, like, oh, I took a shower and changed my pajamas. But, you know, those of you who have been in the position of not being able to get out of bed for a day or more, you know that you feel like you've just conquered the world when you've done something like that. So I find, too, that not only in addition to sort of letting myself sink into that bad place and being kind to myself while I'm in it, but it also makes me feel like, OK, I did this one little thing. At some point, I'm going to be able to do more.
Yep.
So these little habits that we're talking about, you know, they give you just enough of a little thrill of accomplishment to say, OK, that felt pretty good. So when I'm feeling a little bit more up to it, there's more I can do that's going to get me that same feeling of accomplishment.
Exactly. And also that you're not so powerless over this very real thing that is happening to you.
Right.
That, you know, depression and anxiety is a very real thing, but it doesn't have to fully control you. And even though it so often feels like it does.
Right.
I mean, it really, you know, and I say this from a place of like, living this so deeply and for such a long time. So I also want to say something else. I recently read a book because I was interviewing the author. It was a darling little book. It was about breakups and heartbreak and the lessons you can learn from it. And I found her so thoughtful and really enjoyed her. But there was one thing in the book that really has stayed with me in a negative way. I found it frustrating. And it was that she used the term choose happiness.
Mm.
And I so understand that, that sentiment, but it simply is not a choice for a lot of us to choose happiness. And I mulled it over cause I wanted to turn it into, I didn't want this to be a criticism of her. I wanted to turn it into something positive. And what I realized is that in my own life, I cannot always choose happiness. That's not often a choice I have to make, but I can choose action.
Mm.
And that is actually the way that I, in my own life, have handled my mental health issues, because unfortunately I'm also a person who can't take meds.
Mm.
Or I can, but I can only take a very certain type of meds. So I am, as like my best friend and I, again, you know, I can always find the humor in any of this, right? My best friend and I was just in LA with him and we were laughing and laughing and laughing over this. If there is a negative side effect of any kind of medication, I'm going to be the one who has it. So I am part of that like sliver, 1% sliver of the population for whom, antidepressants make me suicidal.
Great.
Yeah, that's a nifty trick.
That's great.
And I learned it in my late 20s. I went through probably not my first significant depressive episode, but the first one that I was able to identify as a significant depressive episode. And my doctor put me on, I don't even remember what it was, Zoloft or one of those. And I was on it for a good, I want to say 2 years or something. And during those 2 years, my depression got so much worse. Mm-hmm. Everything just like turned gray in my life, like my life was dirty dishwater, and I thought that my thought process at the time was, if it's this bad with the meds, what would I be like without them? I can never go off them. And then I started doing research and I started working with a therapist. Thank God I should be working with a therapist the whole time.
Yes.
This was happening.
Therapy is great, people. Everybody go to therapy.
Yeah, they love therapy. And I got in with a therapist and I talked to her about it, and she actually helped me get off the meds. And when I did, things started getting a lot better. But one of the very scary things that had happened during this time that I was on the medication was I became very seriously suicidal. I share this because I think it's really important for people to hear, on sort of both sides of the meds thing. that I could try other ones. For me, I have made the choice not to because the risk that I take of getting the med that does cause me to kill myself, and I'm laughing. I'm sorry. It's not funny at all, but I don't know. It's so ridiculous.
Right.
It's a risk that I've decided for my own self I'm not willing to take. But I mentioned that it is an option, and I don't want to discourage anyone from not trying medication, adjusting medication, working with a doctor to find the right thing. Meds help so many people I know and love. But I also want to talk about my own personal choice and why I've made it. And I feel comfortable with it. It also just means that my own managing of my mental health issues takes a little bit more effort. Mm. But I've found, and it's never not a challenge. It's never not a struggle. I was actually talking to one of the Tender Tots about it last night, because apparently now I'm just like a mood disorder counselor to the Tender Tots too. No, but it's sweet. You know,
which is amazing.
I mean, yeah. This is one of the ones with whom I have a friendship, and so in addition to all the rest of the stuff, and I said to him, I was like, you know, it's never not a challenge. I just do it every single day, just like people who take meds take their meds every single day. Or, you know, do their best to. And so I actually wanted to talk a little bit about the actions that I take.
Right. Yes.
Just again, so that I also just really want to say I do not in any way want to discourage anyone from medication.
I am a person who is managed by medication. And I'm very open about that, as you know, as you are about not being.
Yeah.
And it is a very personal choice, and it's something that you want to work through with your doctor.
Yeah.
And see what works for you. But you know, for me, for example, you know, I know that I can't function without the medication, you know, and that's something that I learned a very long time ago. And I've sort of, you know, but even with that, you know, having the medication to kind of help my baseline, it is still a challenge. And there is still a lot of action that I need to take. So, you know, I don't think we're in very different situations here. We just manage our mental illness in different ways.
Yes.
You know, I choose to use medication because it works well for me. And I found what works for me. And fortunately, it was not too terribly much of an ordeal to get to that point, you know, a little bit here and there. But, you know, I think what's important to take away from this is that all of the options are valid.
Yes.
You know, whatever you choose to do or whatever is right for how you manage your mental illness is not necessarily going to be the same for everybody else. So, you know, try to be, whichever choice you make, try to be kind to yourself about what that means. You
yes.
know, because there's a lot of people who are anti-meds, not, you know, not for their own personal reasons, but they don't think anybody should be on
yes.
on mental health
right.
meds. And, you know, I have a real problem with that.
Because, I have a real problem with that.
because, you know, I would be in pretty rough shape without that intervention.
Yeah.
But I also wouldn't dream of judging somebody who chooses not to use medication because that's what's right for them.
Right.
So,
well, and also I think when you hear someone like me yes. saying, like, you're sitting across the table from yeah. me, like, oh, yeah, Jolie, maybe don't take the thing that's going to make you commit suicide. Please
yeah,
don't do that.
There's like, probably another way we can go about
yeah,
this.
That seems like a pretty good, smart choice that you've made yes. for your own self and your brain chemistry.
So everybody is different when it comes to that. And
exactly.
I think it's accepting for yourself, you know, what that means. But it's also, you know, medication doesn't mean you don't have to put any work in.
Yes.
So and that's an important thing also. You know, so if you're like me and you're medicated, you still do have to make choices. You still have to act. You have to choose to act.
Right. Choose action.
Choose action. And
choose action.
And that, you know, I think is a big part of it. You know, for sometimes, you know, it's rather than choosing action or choosing happiness, it's going to be choosing survival.
Yes.
And that's the most important part. Choose survival first.
Yes.
And then figure out from there where to go.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think it's just there are a lot of different ways that people deal with their mental illnesses. And again, you know, we're speaking to our own personal experiences here. But, you know, it's good to understand that there's a bunch of ways to go about it.
Yeah. I love that you said choose survival. I'm actually going to tell a really quick story because I know the audience, this will really like resonate with longtime listeners. So last summer, I had just a really, really horrible depressive episode. There were really times when I did not think I was going to make it through that one. And, you know, it's one of those weird things where, like, for me, every depressive episode gets worse. Mm-hmm. Everyone is worse than the last one.
It's cumulative, yes. Yep.
But I get better at surviving it because I've been through it before. But this one was just, I mean, it was just bad. And I really did not know if I was going to completely make it. And I did. Obviously, mm-hmm. I'm here behind this mic. But I was supposed to go to Detroit with the gang from Jalopnik, my beloved Jalopniks. And we were going to surprise one of our colleagues who lives out in Detroit and have me show up at his house with a video crew and be like, David, I'm cleaning your house. Because he finally was like, I have so many car parts like in my kitchen that this house has become unlivable and I need some help. And so the idea, and he and I are very close, and it would have been not inappropriate for us to have done that. And I was so excited about this. And Patrick was excited, and Balaban was excited, and we were all so hyped about it. And when it came time to plan the trip, it hit around the time when I was just really falling apart, and I had to say, I can't do this. And it was so disappointing because I was so excited and because I was going to be with my favorite people and we were going to be making this really funny video content and I was going to help my friend David, who I love, and I just couldn't do it. But even though I was disappointed, I felt very proud of myself for flagging it mm-hmm. and saying no instead of putting myself in a situation that I know would have not been good for me. It would have been very, very difficult for them. I didn't want to burden them with it. And so that was really a time when I chose survival. Yeah. And, you know, I survived. Here I am, you know.
We're all glad for that.
Yeah. And, you know, okay, so I didn't get to go to Detroit with the Jalopniks and clean David's house. Like, there will be another time,
right?
You know.
And that's, you know, and when you have problems with your mental health, those are choices that you have to make all the time. And you know, like we said at the top of the show, understanding what you can and can't do and what your limitations are, you know, and where you're when you need to say no, that's a huge part of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Saying no is huge.
Huge. Huge. So let me talk about some of the other little things I do that are kind of my actions. Just because I think like it's good to say, like, quantify exactly what it is that I do. And sometimes I am not great at some of the things, and sometimes I'm great at some of the things, and but I do my best. So first, you know, the making the bed thing, the giving myself the permission when I need it to get back into bed kind mm-hmm. of thing. Cleaning something small.
Yes.
How do you guys think I got this way? How do you think I know how to do all this stuff? Why do you think I love cleaning? Because I am a control freak. And I sometimes have days where I can't. So for me, it's not so much can't get out of bed. It's can't leave the house. Mm-hmm. And when I can't leave the house, I at least do a trade off with myself in which I say, OK, you can stay in the house today, but yeah.
you got to
handsies and kneesies the floor. So you've accomplished something without leaving the house. Cooking is the same way for me. Though cleaning and cooking are things that they're actions that I can do that don't require me to leave the house and interact with people when the world feels too overwhelming. Yeah.
And that's, and you know, along the same lines as of cleaning something small, you know, a lot of times people will say, you know, well, how am I supposed to keep up with the mess in my house when I'm in the middle of a depressive episode or something like that? And, you know, my advice is always start with your nightstand, you know, so take,
oh, that's great.
Take the 10 minutes, clear off your nightstand, or whatever, you know, if you're on the couch, because, you know, a lot of us take our depression to the couch
right.
instead of
yeah.
the bed.
The coffee table.
So whatever it is that's right there in wherever your little nest happens to be, just clear off the surface. Because for a couple of reasons, you know, if you're in bed, you're probably just kind of accumulating stuff next to you and you're not really, you know, it's like whatever, you know, water glasses and whatever snack you had and all of that. But also when you're sort of in the midst of it and you're on the couch or in bed and you look over to this one space that you've just exerted some control over, it kind of gives you a little bit of hope that, okay, if I can do this when I'm in the middle of it, when I'm finally coming out of this, it's doable. you know, I can get, you know, because it's this weird, like, it almost seems to passively happen when you're in a low space, when the mess just kind of builds up around you.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, you're like, well, I haven't moved from bed. How is it messy in my house? How did that happen? But I think anyone who's had these struggles will recognize that, you know, where you're just, you know, you feel bad, you know, you're having a bad time mental health wise, and then your house is getting messier, and it's just a constant kind of cycle that sort of perpetuates itself. So taking 5 minutes to, you know, like you said, hands and knees to the floor, or clear off your nightstand, or do something that's small and controllable, it sort of interrupts that cycle a little bit, I think, and you know, gives you a little bit of hope that, okay, this isn't going to last forever.
Right.
And I can still function while it's happening in whatever small way that happens to be.
Yeah. So the last big thing, so actually probably one or two other things that I'm pretty careful about. I try to be careful about my sleep. Getting 8 hours a night makes a huge difference in my ability to cope. I'm not always great at it. I've been a little less great, I would say, in the past 4 or so months. Dating makes, things a little topsy turvy. But the dating is, I mean, that's another thing. I'm not currently in a mental health crisis, so I can also ease up on certain things. You know, watching my alcohol intake when things are bad, that's a real challenging one for me, because I'm a drinker and I'm a party girl, and a lot of times, like, getting out of the house means going out with friends and drinking, and, you know, that's kind of my jam. But also, you know, I do try to, like, just be aware of it. Again, you know, the dating thing really is, like, throwing that completely off. But also, I'm not in a mental health crisis at this stage in the game. The big one, you guys know this, I know you hear about it all the time. I know it's kind of annoying, I know it's frustrating, but it is so real. It's so real for me. The gym is, I know. I know you want to kill me. Here's the thing, Rachel, look at me. I do not have a gym body. I'm not, you know, this is really, I'm not going because I look better. I do look better for it. Can you imagine what if I didn't? But, like, it is not, it's not a hard body thing for me in any way, shape, or form. It is truly that, it is my meds. Like, other people take a pill every day. I go to the gym every day. That's my pill.
And as much as
it's not even that I particularly love going. Now I do, because I've gotten into it and I love what happens as a result of going. I do it because it is my med.
That makes sense.
I don't skip it because it is my med.
That makes sense.
It's my pill. And that's why I'm able to go every day, because that's exactly how I treat it. I treat it as the thing I have to take every day. I've had to, because my body is falling apart.
Right.
I have to now take a rest day once a week. You're not supposed to go 6 days a week, and I do.
I mean,
the hardest day of the week is my rest day.
Hmm.
Today is my rest day because I'm with you, and we're going to go for lunch after this.
It's going to be great.
It is going to be great, but it is very difficult for me to take a rest day. You know, again, not because, like, I particularly love being on that treadmill, not because I want, you know, I'm afraid I'm going to get fat if I don't go. It's nothing like that. It literally is, like, I panic a little bit, like, oh my God, what if I spiral because I didn't go today?
And I think, you know, the as much as I groan about it, you know,
you can groan. No, I'm glad you groaned about it, because I know people do, but I also have to be very honest about what an incredible impact it's had on my life.
And the endorphins are a real thing.
They,
you know,
they
it's
are.
It's you know, I have complicated feelings about the gym, I think is the nicest possible way to put that. But you know, for those of us who aren't gym people, you know, but I take the dog for a walk, you know, or I'll work outside in the garden, or which I also hate, by the way. I hate yard work as much as I hate the gym, but I have to look at it more. So
yeah, fair enough.
But
I don't love yard work either, oddly enough. You know why? Because I don't like soil under my fingernails.
I just, there's something about yard work which, I don't know.
I find it tedious.
I find it super tedious.
And yet we, like, both love, like, cleaning grout.
Right.
Which I don't find.
Which I have no problem.
No,
I have no problem with a toothbrush on the grout. Like, that's, you know, which I do have to say, though, that it's funny that you picked that example, though, because that is the deep cleaning of the grout has traditionally been my indication that I'm either having a severe anxiety attack or I'm in a manic episode.
Oh, interesting.
Like specifically the kitchen grout is my thing.
Interesting.
So I have to always, when I get motivated, I suppose, to clean the grout, I always have to kind of step back for a minute and say, okay, why am I doing this? Like, is this indicative of something else that's going on with me? Because it's very focused. Mm-hmm. It's very controlled. Mm-hmm. And it's funny that's the example, because that is my, you know, I have to, if I'm cleaning my grout like that, I have to kind of look at why.
Yeah.
And, okay. You know, so for me, if my grout gets a little dirty and a little stained, it's actually kind of a good thing, because it means I haven't been in that mindset for a while. And I can choose to do it. And it's a little bit more, a little bit less of an urgent thing, you know, where I'm like, I have to get it done now. Because it's always at like 11 o'clock at night, or, you know, some completely random time, you know, I'll be late for work because I'm, you know, I feel like, oh, there's a stain there, I got to deal with it. But I think, yeah, the hatred of yard work is just super interesting, because it's, you know, we have this need to control and clean everything inside the house. As soon as you get outside, I'm like, I hate it. I hate everything about it. I hate dealing with leaves. I hate, and this is, you know, again, like I said, I'm a very suburban person. I have a decent sized yard. So it's a lot of work that I don't enjoy doing and don't always see the value in doing. So
the value.
Yes. It's super helpful, though, for me to be able to communicate with readers, though, about how they hate doing housework, because it's the way I feel about yard work. So I have to kind of try to transition my viewpoint on yard work and say, okay, this is how people feel about the stuff that really doesn't bother me.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, and that's, and I think the difference, one of the big differences between you and me is, you know, you're a clean person, you know, you're a clean person, and I'm not a clean person. I am a messy person who has come to being clean through a lot of hard work.
Through hard work.
But it's still very, it's very difficult for me at times. You know, it's not as natural, I think, as it maybe is for you.
Because
you know, it's something that I have really had to work on. And, you know, the state of my mental health is a big part of why I even got started with this in the first place. You know, so it's the taking a look at, you know, what tasks sort of correspond to how my mental health is doing is an interesting thing.
Very,
you know,
interesting.
But like you said, the endorphins, the going to the gym, the physical activity, you really can't discount that either.
Yeah.
You know, as much as I complain about it, I never like it, but you do notice the difference.
Right. So let me say this about the gym thing before we wrap up the first part of this two-part episode that Rachel and I are doing. I've talked about this before on the show. I had been a very good gym person, and then I fell out of it. During a depression, I just basically stopped going to the gym, even though I knew I should be going. But then you get into the spiral where, you know, you know you should go, but you can't go. And it's, you know, it's the same thing as like you can't get out of bed kind of thing. And so my trick, the way that I tricked myself into going, just like, you know, you can get out of bed and get back in it if you make it. Yeah. You can
turn the shower on.
My trick for the gym was I discovered, and you're going to hear I'm using the same language over and over again. I discovered a podcast I really love called Watch What Crappens. It's a Bravo recap. I love Bravo more than anything in the world. I would only allow myself to listen to Watch What Crappens when I was at the gym.
Oh, so it's like your little reward.
It was my little reward. But I also did another thing. I would give myself, and I still do this from time to time. I don't often have to do it anymore because it's just a habit to go to the gym. But from time to time, I have to. I would give myself permission to only do 20 minutes of like light walking on the treadmill. So not even.
Nothing intense.
Nothing intense. And what I would find would happen was once I was there, after the 20 minutes, I would want to keep going, or I'd be like, oh, I'll just do the full 30, or I'll do 45 or whatever normally I was. But giving yourself permission, like just saying that the thing is actually going. It's not even the workout. It's the going, and giving yourself permission to just go.
Just go and do it quick.
Do like the laziest workout.
Yeah. Do the least amount of work possible.
Yeah, exactly. That was very helpful for me in getting myself back into a regular gym habit that I knew was going to be so critical towards my mental health. So to the extent that any of that might be helpful for you guys, I mention it. Then there's the other thing that I now do that's like really my reward. And this isn't possible for everybody. It's sort of like maybe a little bit unique to New York, but you can tweak it. On my way to the gym, I stop and I get a dollar slice. That's my pre-workout fuel. I have a dollar slice.
That sounds really good.
And
right
then
now.
I go, yeah. And then I go to the 7-Eleven and I get a big gulp of Diet Coke and I drink the big gulp of Diet Coke on the treadmill. This is not a healthy living lifestyle at all, but it's my reward. It makes me excited to go. Because I look forward to that dollar slice and that big gulp every day.
And if that's what it takes to motivate you, then there's no problem with that. And, and you know, it just all boils down to there's no one right answer for everybody.
That's
and you have to find what motivates you and what's going to make you feel better, which might not be the same thing that it is for everybody else.
Yeah. Might not be a dollar slice and a big gulp. Probably actually is not going to be. But, you know, I think the foundational concept is one that hopefully people can find useful.
Yes. And I think in all of that, too, we talked a lot about giving yourself permission for certain things.
And that was the language that I was saying I'm using.
And I think that that's so critical when you're dealing with your own mental health, to be able to say, you know, my expectations are this, or what I want to do is this, but I'm giving myself permission for the bare minimum.
Yes.
And that's just a matter of being kind to yourself and being forgiving of what's going on. You know, when you have mental health issues, it's all a little bit out of your control. So, you know, giving yourself permission for the things that you can control makes a huge difference.
It sure does. On that note, I think this is a good time to wrap up the first part of our very special two-part episode. So that'll do it for this episode of Ask a Clean Person podcast. Rachel is going to be back on the next episode. We're going to talk more about the intersection of cleaning and mental health together. We've got kind of a funny little testimonial in question, and then we've got one that's really, really serious. And that Rachel, I know, has a lot of thoughts on. If you like what you heard today, please consider becoming a patron by going to patreon.com/askacleanperson and selecting one of the amazing rewards I'm offering to my listeners. I would also love it if you would subscribe on Acast or iTunes, leave a rating, and tell your pals about this weird little cleaning show that you love so much. And of course, thanks to my listeners for joining me for another episode of Ask a Clean Person, the podcast.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.